and the singers did a great job. Andy's on a college course just this weekend, so he couldn't be with us, but I thought you guys sounded great. And it's great to be in the presence of God. Father, as we talk today about this area of relationships, I just ask that you speak to us in a very real way, that we're really conscious that you're here and you're with us, that your healing power is touching people, that we cannot deny that something supernatural is going on here in our midst today. And we're really thankful for it in Jesus' name. Amen. Fantastic, everybody. Good morning, Felicia. It's lovely to see you. Can you give Felicia a big welcome? She comes from Beckenham. She's another great testimony of the healing power of God. We ministered to her a number of years ago now, and it was a dramatic, really dramatic, miraculous situation. And I'm sure that she'll tell you later on a little bit about that, if you'd like to know more. We're talking about relationships, folks. This is going to be good. It's a new series. And I want to talk to you about this. This is the message title. The common denominator of relationships is you. Everyone say me. Now, we live in an interesting world where we today sometimes struggle, and especially amongst Christians, with the idea of how valuable we are. So there'd be a default in a lot of our thinking that kind of feels like, am I really all that important? Shouldn't I? In fact, if I'm humble, like Jesus says I should be, then isn't it all about me being kind of not too important and everyone else is important? And therefore, if the idea is I'm at the center of everything, there's something fundamentally wrong with that. And that's like kind of a Bible truth with a bad twist on it, because there is some truth in that. In other words, self-centeredness, which is what we're reacting against when we think that way, nobody likes that. You know, even if people are really gifted musicians or great singers, if they come across really arrogant, like I'm the most important person in the world and you're not, that's really unattractive. Footballers, rugby players, anyone in the public spotlight, the more you are in that spotlight, the more the temptation is to feel that you're superior to everyone else. And that is it's unpleasant. People don't like it. And it's unattractive. But if you are happy with you and you like you and you believe in you and you feel like you're important, that's an enormously helpful attribute in life. And I'm going to show you today about, as we talk about relationships, we're going to focus. We've got kind of 4 weeks. Good morning. Come on in. We've got about 4 weeks together. We're going to kind of talk through different aspects, and we're going to talk about men and women and that whole side of things. We might talk about sex. You never know. We might get there. You know, it usually kind of draws a little bit of extra attention from the young people amongst us, you know. And no, that'll be fun. But we're going to talk about all these kinds of things. But today I want to talk about this, and I've got a couple of slides that I want you to walk through. Let's go to this first one here today together. The greatest joy in life. Let's break it down a little bit. The greatest joy in life is positive and enriching and whole relationships. That's the greatest joy in life. When people don't have good relationships, whether it's with a spouse, whether it's with friends, whether it's with family, whether it's with co-workers, all those things. When those things are strained, no matter how much money you have, no matter how much success you have, life is, to use an Australian vernacular, pretty crap. It just isn't good. And yet, if you haven't maybe got as much money as you feel like you'd like, or there are aspects of your life that haven't worked as well as you want, but you have healthy relationships, you're surrounded by people that love you and you love them, there is a strength that comes into your life that nothing else can replace. You are designed to have happy relationships, and it's absolutely central to your life. Are you with me? Are you there so far? I'm just getting a little bit of response, engaging, making sure. So the greatest, that's the way people are made. The greatest joy in life is great relationships. So now there's two of those that we look at. Number one is you and God. That's a relationship. And if that one is strained or weak or almost non-existent, then that impacts every other relationship. Because, and I want to throw this out to you, because we always got visitors, we always got new people, we always got people that are maybe new to our church, and I absolutely believe that there is a way to live for Jesus. There's a Christianity, there's a church life that is so abundant, so thriving, so wonderful, so positive, so life-changing, that if we could communicate it to the world out there, the vast majority of them would run with open arms to the God that we serve. He's full of love. And one of the challenges we have, and one of the challenges that I'm addressing and we as a church are addressing, is that a lot of times the communication about what God is and what a Christian is from the Christian population, from the churches, to the people that right now are not in church for whatever reason, has been not as positive as it could be. And there's a lot of people out there that are kind of looking and scratching their heads and maybe believing in God at some level, but just haven't found that church makes a lot of sense for them. And that's a problem that we have to fix. And we're working on that. And so one of these things is this whole idea, let me throw this out at you, that the essence of Christianity, what Jesus came to bring, is not about believing in God and obeying the Ten Commandments and being a good person. Most people think that's what it is. It's not really centered on that at all. It's about God believing in you and His energy and His life and His strength actually infusing you on the inside so it changes how you live. That's what Christianity is about. And rules and laws are secondary to that. Now, I know that there are going to be some people in the church world that have been so brought up on the importance of rules and laws and regulations and the guilt that generally goes with them, that when you say something like that, which is a liberating thought, they get nervous because they may have been in a church all their lives and never associated God with liberty and freedom. But there's a verse that some of you all know that says, Jesus said this. He said, you're going to know the truth and the truth will set you a free person. The closer you get to truth, the freer you're going to be. And if you feel bound up and if you feel like life is a whole series of can'ts and don'ts and won'ts and failures and struggles, then you're evidently not too close to truth. And if you were told that this is the truth about God and you're living like that, I want to propose to you, based on what Jesus said, that that ain't the truth about God at all. The closer you get to God, the freer you are. And then people say, well, hang on a minute. If that's true, then doesn't that leave me free to do the wrong thing as well as the right thing? And that's an important thing for people to think through. When you think like that, and some do, it's because in your background you've got a strong emphasis on rules rather than relationship with God. That's why you think that way, about what's right and what's wrong. And the chances are that you spend a pretty good portion of your day down on yourself, criticizing yourself, feeling poor about or guilty about something you did wrong, which isn't freedom at all. And then you hear a message like this and you think, hang on a minute, and it shakes you up and it makes sense and it's kind of, I should be freer. But my heart is to get this stuff inside of you so that not just on Sunday in an exciting service, you know, and coffee and tea and the whole thing we do, but actually in your life from Monday to Saturday, this is working out in my life. I'm getting freer every week. I'm getting happier every week. And let me come back to the point I just made. Doesn't that mean that I'm free to choose badly as well as choose good? And the fact is, yes, you are. And that is a risk God is willing to take. And that's a risk that many times Christian leaders are not willing to take. And that's a risk many times Christian parents are not willing to take because they've been so rule-minded. And so they think, my child is growing up and they want to start doing some things that I don't want them to do. That's normal, by the way, for those of you that haven't had children. And how do I deal with that? You see, and we tend to go one extreme to the other. We tend to say, well, okay, I want you to do that. I'm going to try and control you to make you do that. So this will work out in things like this. I'll make you feel a little guilty if you're doing things I don't want. I'll put the constraints on you stronger to stop you doing the things I want. And the motive is we want the best for the other person, but that system doesn't work. And God doesn't work that way. But when we think that way, then we interpret that God, as kind of the father of all, will think that way. And then you find out that God actually leaves you free to make your choices, and it's kind of scary. But it's a scary we need to walk into, because being free is much better than being stuck under a whole lot of rules. God wanted you to be free. God made you to choose. And you're going to make some bad choices. I don't know if there's... Is there anyone here in the building that's ever made a bad choice? Just lift your hand. Yeah, and all the liars, we will pray for you later. We've all made bad choices. And you know what? God still loves us. Am I condoning bad choices? No, of course not. Bad choices don't help you. But what God doesn't do is come down like a ton of bricks and smack you around the head because you made a bad choice. He remains the same as he was before, which is that he loves you and he has given you freedom. And so the bottom line to Christianity is this: when you discover how much he loves you, you want to love him back. And you're free, you choose your freedom to please him. And you can make that choice. And the more you become aware of how precious you are to him, the more likely you are to freely choose to follow him. And that's what he wants. But he's not going to be mad at you when you make a bad choice, and he is not going to jump on you with a whole set of rules about how you should and shouldn't behave. Did we get that out of our system? I think that's me that had to get it out of my system. Are you with me? Did it help you though? Because for a lot of people, it's almost like a new kind of Christianity. And I feel like it's truth that's going to set people free. And I'm ready to tell the whole of Staines, will you help me? Is this good news? So let's have a look at this. Number one, you and God. So you were designed, instead of, well, I believe in God and I'll obey his rules and I'll be a good boy, it's the life of God in you. That's what it is. It's like you're a car and God's the petrol, or the fuel, or the diesel. That's more or less how it works. He's going to put energy in you. The car still looks like a car, and if you put the wrong kind of fuel in it, it might sputter along. But when you get the pure, good fuel, and you put it in the car, it runs smoothly. And that's what God is like. He's fuel. And so we have, the way it works is, humans do not function as well as they were designed to function unless God's life is in there. Are you with me? So that's you and God. But then you got number two, you and other people. And those two relationships is all it comes down to. There's you and God and there's you and people. But inside you and people, there's you and you. And that's what I'm talking about today. Both of those relationships are crucial. Jesus summarizes the entire Old Testament, the law and the prophets, in a few lines. That's got to be interesting. I mean, the whole Old Testament, the law and the prophets. Let me just boil it down to two lines for you. Don't you love that kind of? Talk about summarizing. At the same time, he gives an answer to what is the greatest commandment and the second greatest commandment. He does it all in a few lines. Sound interesting? Sound important? Some of you know where we're going. Let's have a look at this next page here. Look at this. Could this be important? I venture to suggest it is. Here's the commandment. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on those two commandments. So the bottom line, and you know this probably, you've probably heard this, you know, out of 1 Corinthians 13:13, which says, now there's three things that remain, faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. So it's a huge one. And the world knows it. If you go and see movies, one of the greatest themes in movies is love. Sometimes it's a man and a woman's love. Sometimes it's camaraderie kind of love, fighting and believing in a cause. Our music, our songs, you know. I will always love me, are you? And our world is full of it. Why? Because those guys, artists, are writing out of the cry of their heart, and it's the cry of our heart. I want to suggest to you that the love every single human person is looking for is in God and in Jesus. Okay? Let's flip over to this next one. The common denominator of all your relationships, you and God and you and everybody else, there's one common denominator, you. And so you've got to adjust your thinking about how important you are. I remember when I was a young Christian in Australia, they ran, it was a company called National Mutual. I don't know if they still exist, but they're owned by one of these giant, I forget the name of them now, one of these giant international, multinational insurance companies. And they did this, they might have done it here. This was before I came over here, so it's a while ago. And they did a whole big, heavy advertising promotion on their insurance services. And the theme of the whole thing was, and it ended like this, for the most important person in the world, you. And I remember as a young Christian thinking, I just reacted against that. It was all like, no, I'm not the most important person in the world. Everybody else. Otherwise, I'm like selfish. But actually, that's like I said before, it's a twist on a truth. You're incredibly valuable to God. And what we thought, can I throw this in on humility? What we thought was humble. We thought feeling like that was humble. Oh, I'm just not important. I'm just a worm. I can't afford to be. Put me on the stage? No. No, I couldn't. Because everyone would be looking at me. It would be all about I'm in the center. And it shouldn't be. Jesus should be in the center. And all those kind of good, nice thoughts, you know. And there's a side of that that's fine. But there's a side of that that's really problematic because you are made to shine. If you've never written that down in your life before, write it down in your notes, take it down. You are made to shine. See, you're God's representative in the earth, right? God made a whole lot of things. He's very clever. Trees, whales, dolphins, little bugs. Incredibly smart. Unbelievable how it all works. And then he made something that was better than everything else. That's you and me. And no one else did he breathe into, but you and me, he breathed into. That's why we have this need for God. That's why we have this need for love. The Bible says God is love. That's why we write songs and create art all about it, which dolphins, lovely though they are, clever little fellas that I love, I don't know of any songs they've written about love. I don't even think they have like a top 40 or anything. They just kind of swim around, you know, and do their thing. But we're just in a completely different class. Can you see that? We're made in the image of God. We were made to rule this planet just like God rules heaven. And he gave us the power to do it. And you can see that because we can destroy or create pretty easily. We can kill thousands of whales. We can wipe a whole species out. We can also gather together, raise money or send people and go and visit nations that are less well off than ourselves and change their lives. We can do that. Now, whales are lovely and their brains are a lot bigger than yours. But let me tell you, if you've fallen over and had a heart attack, no whale is going to jump up on shore and find a way to give you. It ain't going to happen. We do that for whales, But they don't do that for us because we're just in a different class. We're like God. And when we start to think that way, which is the right way to think, and that his life is in us, that starts to give us a what the psychologists would call a healthy self-image. Now, psychology has figured out what God said all along, that you're incredibly valuable. And psychology knows that we function better on love. We function better when there's less strain. We function better when we believe in ourselves. We function better when we think clearly. Most of our problems and issues in life as people, where we live less than the level we could, is because we don't realize how valuable we are, which is exactly why the devil picked on that little thing and said, let me try and get the Christians to feel really bad about themselves. Let me kind of twist the truth a little bit so they walk around all like this, because Almighty God is shining through them. And if I can dull that light somehow, if I can make them feel just really low and unimportant and insignificant, and then they'll treat other people the same way, their relationships will be all crappy, and that'll be great as far as the devil's concerned, because this great, awesome God doesn't get to shine through us. But you were made to shine. And listen to me, it doesn't matter how many advantages or disadvantages you have in life. In fact, generally speaking, it's better to have some disadvantages. It is, and I can show you that from the Bible. That's not my subject today. But generally speaking, if you've been born or raised with most things coming to you very easily, there are things in life, character qualities which make you who you really are, that tend not to develop because they develop best in adversity. Oysters only develop out of an irritation. Joseph only became who he became, which was a marvelous man that changed the world, with beautiful spirit and character. But he never would have become that if his brothers basically didn't try and kill him, or at least have him put away and shunned him for the whole of his life, and he'd been through one problem after another. So look at it that way. Remember, it doesn't matter how problematic it's been. God is a specialist. That's not the deal that takes you where you're going. The deal that takes you with you where you're going is what do you believe about you right now in whatever circumstances you find yourself. And here's another trick that the devil plays on people. He'll make you think, yeah, well, because all this stuff is kind of gone wrong, maybe I did something wrong. It's a typical ploy of the devil. You see this in children. When parents get divorced or go through marital breakdown, it's common, and children that oftentimes have to go through counselling or different things like that, it's common for them to feel somehow it's their fault. It's ridiculous. Of course it's not their fault. But when you think it's your fault, you start acting guilty, you start doing wrong things, making wrong judgments, feeling down about yourself, and there's the devil smiling. That's it. Got another one down, feeling bad about themselves. And I'm here to ruin what the devil said for you, and to bring what God said for you, which is when he looked at you, he said, doesn't matter what's happened, let me just convince you how much you were designed to shine and be free about it, and let's see where you go from there. All right? Now, I want to talk about this common denominator, and I'm not going to take long, but I want to tell you how that works. Here's some of the things that we get stuck in. Let me give you an example. You're driving down the freeway, or those of you that don't drive are sitting with someone else in a car who's driving down the motorway, and you're in a bit of a hurry because you just got a phone call and your mum's fallen over. She's ill. We think she's going to be all right, but I've got to get... So you're pushing the envelope a little bit. And you want to pass this guy who's in the right lane, which he shouldn't be for all you drivers, left lane. And he's in the right lane. And you're going a little bit faster than he wants to go, and he's probably looking at his clock and saying, well, the speed limit's 70, and I'm doing 72, so I'm going to stay in the right lane. Or else, that's one scenario, or else you get someone else who you're passing them and they don't like it, or you're in the process of passing them, and they actually deliberately get in the lane in front of you and slow down to stop you passing them. Has anyone ever happened to anyone before? I'm sure that you've never done that. But that's a really good example, a common example of how we handle relationships and why we aren't good at it. Because here's a person that you've never met before, who you've got no idea about their life or what pressure they could be under. And basically what's happening is you are trying to control their behavior with your car because you don't agree with it. And then the person who's trying to be controlled will react against that. What's the problem? The problem is that you are, people are generally speaking, so afraid and insecure about aspects of their life that they're trying to control. I mean, it's ridiculous. Who made you the police? You know? It's your job now to tell me how to drive. If I'm breaking the law, let the police sort it out. But you see, what we're trying to do is control somebody because we don't agree with their behavior. It's the same thing that we see sometimes in Christian leadership, sometimes in Christian parenting, where we don't agree with the behavior, so we try and control it. And it doesn't work. Now, if we tend to react like that, here's another example that sometimes happens. I'll give you one more with co-workers. I had a situation like this in a co-worker where I'm working in a certain situation. And the way that the work works in this situation is you kind of split it. Work comes in and you split it, okay? And so we're working in this and too much had gone one way. So I bring it up in conversation. I say, now what's happening here? And the person, and you might have had something like this happen, the person assumes I'm having a go. Are you with me? It's like, well, are you criticizing me for this? That kind of thing. And then, of course, the defenses go up. People, what's happening? Instead of reacting rationally, we're reacting emotionally. And when one person's defenses go up, and they may say something like, well, you know, you did this last time, then we say, well, no, that isn't true. And everybody starts talking. And you end up with an unhealthy relational situation. And for some of us, parents don't talk to kids in our world anymore. Sometimes husbands and wives, it's so strained that they sleep in different rooms. Sometimes the way we work at work, we feel like the boss is picking on us. This is all unfair. And the issue is this. If you keep running into problematic relationships, don't get all offended, but just remember this. The common denominator is you. You can't change. Write it down if you've never wrote it. You can't change anyone else. You can only change you. So there are two things in my final points I want to bring to your attention, and then we're going to talk into this over the next couple of weeks. The first thing is this, is to learn how to relate well to other people. It's a skill. So to give you an example, you know, if I'm with this co-worker and so they overreact because they've misinterpreted the information. And that kind of thing has happened. That'll happen in your families. That'll happen around a Christmas dinner table. What do you do? Number one, you realize this, I can't control their behavior, I can only control mine. So I'm responsible for the level of my relationships. And bear in mind that you can't have a good relationship with anyone else unless both parties are willing. So don't start to judge yourself and say, well, you know, some of these people that I'm trying to build a good relationship, it's not working. That will depend on them. Don't make them feel bad about it though. But here's the thing. When you deal with relationships, number one, first thing is, learn not to react emotionally. That's what we tend to do. And there's a physiological reason why you do that, the way the brain is structured. But you've got to learn, and the Bible calls it this, learning to rule your spirit or rule your passions. You're passionate about something? Yeah. I am doing the right thing in this job. Not everybody in this job does the right thing, but I do. And now you're accusing me of, and my voice goes up, my intensity goes up, I'm pointing the finger, and that's very difficult for people to deal with. Now, I understand how you feel, but you've got to learn not to respond emotionally. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, but that's the first. It's an art. just like you learn not to drive into the guy in front of you when he's driving slower than you want him to. You might feel like it, but it's a very expensive habit. Now, you might feel like reacting emotionally, but let me tell you, if the relationships in our lives are the most valuable thing, then it's a more expensive habit than driving into the car in front of you. Because cars and money you can, but some of us have reacted emotionally so much that we've hindered or broken or put in difficulty or jeopardy important relationships because we reacted emotionally. So to learn not to react emotionally, that's one. Number two is let things cool down before you address it. Okay, if the heat goes up, so with Carrie and I, you know, I mean, we hardly ever argue, of course, but we do have moments of intense fellowship. And if you're anything like a human person, you'll have it too. So if you have a disagreement on a certain point of view, the best way to do it is that you've got to, if we're all intense, and sometimes we need to do this, sometimes I need to say, okay, let's just talk about it later. And then that's not fair. It makes it sound like it's all her. That's not true. But I might get, well, you always say that. You always say talk about it later. And I can't afford, or she, either way, to get into a habit of responding emotionally. So we'll talk about it later. And it's best, sometimes I will, because I'll get steamed up, sometimes I'll just go for a walk. I'll go to the other room. I'll just calm down. Might take me 20 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever. It's because you get level. That's the second thing you've got to know. Third thing you've got to know is you've got to talk through it whilst it's fresh enough to talk through. Burying those things and saying, we're not going to talk about it, or I forgot, or now you calm down, it's kind of like, but if words were said or emotions were raised, you want to defuse that. Are you with me? And sometimes what people do is they get into a habit of, they've walked away, we've calmed down, or we've just got annoyed and we've, you know, gone into separate rooms, but we never actually revisit that. And if you do that, you're going to find that the same thing keeps happening and you get into a habit of not talking it through. So part of maturity, and I'm telling you, this is, I believe in education, I believe in you getting degrees, and I believe in you extending yourself, but if you don't learn this, all that stuff ain't going to help you much. And I really believe that the church should be talking about things that impact our life at the deepest level. I believe there's a place for the church where people say, you know, I go to college, I go to uni, it's helped me, but what I hear in the house of God is what really changes my life. That's how it should be. And that's the kind of church we're trying to create. So when you get in that, you see that you've got to talk it through. And here's one of the things, if you're in a relationship that both parties have to agree, and so Carrie and I'll talk about that, and I'll talk with the boys. I have to adjust it a little bit, but they're kind of between 17 and 23. So we'll still have those kind of conversations. Because we've got to be able to say, okay, what happened there? And here's the keys. You've got to be able to say you're sorry, and you've got to move on. Okay, if you can't say you're sorry, the relationship will be hindered. And sorry is not about accepting it's all my fault. Because it takes two to tango, usually. Usually, both of us did something. And if you get into the competition of it was more her than me or it was more him than me, that just doesn't work. Because the goal is not measuring blame. The goal is a happy relationship. And so if you happen to feel like 60% of this at least was her fault, the other person's fault, then why don't you be the bigger Christian and the more Jesus-like person and just be the person that lets go the 60%? Yeah. Cheers for you. Wonderful. But if you're going to wear it like a badge, walk around, you know, she makes more mistakes than me, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's the kind of arrogance that doesn't work. Are you with me? So the ability to say you're sorry, just to learn to say you're sorry. Some people really choke. It's like, well, do you think that maybe we could, yeah, and don't do, I'm sorry, but. Just get rid of that one. I'm sorry, but really you did drive me to it. Just, I'm sorry. What I'm sorry says is, hey, I had a part in this and we ended in a place we didn't want to end. So for my part in that, I'm sorry. And it's good if both parties say sorry. That's really crucial. And then to move forward and to say, okay, let's move forward from here. Let's put some stuff in operation. Now, I want to go to this last point. Let's flip over here because that's, and I've talked already a little bit about that, but let's go to the next slide. If you say you love God but hate your brother, you're a liar. That's what 1 John said. So this is kind of the tough side of it. But I've wanted to walk through the grace and love of God rather than rules and relationships. And love is very patient, very kind. Love doesn't take into consideration a wrong suffered. So it's pointless for us to say we love God but we don't love people. That's the point I'm making. And love is very patient. Everyone say very patient. And very kind. And so that just means that sometimes we don't love that well, do we? But instead of it being a rule, you're supposed to love and you didn't love. How am I supposed to love? You're supposed to be the leader of this marriage. You're the man, so you say, you know, and you're not being very loving. So what am I supposed to be loving if you're not loving? Why don't you, you know, and you get into those kind of, I'm just pulling this out of thin air. I'm sure no one ever had a conversation like that either. Let's go to this next one here. We love him because he first loved us. And we're going to finish on that slide. And I'd love you, Jamela, to punch in that other little bit I put, which is also out of 1 John. We're going to add another verse in here. She's doing it live. Give her a big hand. She's doing a great job. And this other little part says, perfect love casts out fear. We love him because he first loved us, and perfect love casts out fear. I want to suggest to you that the single biggest reason that we act less well than we could is not because we're evil, we're not because God hates us or we've sinned, but because we're afraid. Fear gets people. They've been in a relationship, they got hurt, they're afraid to go forward. They have never had someone put their arms around them without some kind of ulterior motive, so they're afraid of that. They've lived in a world that trained them that their value was on being right. And that's common for many of, certainly my generation and some below, where our parents were very strong on rules, and many people grew up with this mindset of right and wrong. This is the right behavior, this is the wrong behavior. And there's some truth in there, but like I said, the devil can twist that truth. And what we have in our culture now is a reaction against that because it doesn't work very well. And now we don't want to have standards. We don't want to have right and wrong. We've got a whole philosophy, a whole generation of philosophy trying to promote the idea that there really isn't right and wrong, when deep down in our hearts we know that there is. But the reason they're reacting is because our concept was you've got to be right. And if you're right, and arguments are like that. It's not about right and wrong. We're all right on some things and wrong on some things, and it's not the issue. And what happens when you're brought up like that is you start to be afraid of being proven that you're wrong because your approval was based on that you were right. I did good. 3 ticks, well done. There's some value in utilizing that. But the downside is people are afraid, so they get into arguments with their partner, arguments with their boss, arguments with their school teacher because you marked me wrong here and I was right. And you get whole kinds of... And the problem is it's not really about that. And we start to react based on right and wrong. We start to react because that standard was set for us, and really we just get scared of being wrong. We have to prove ourselves right. Fear is the great destroyer of relationships. And if you just picture yourself walking through life without fear, picture, go there for a minute. walking through life, you're not afraid of what anyone thinks. Do mum and dad approve or not approve? Doesn't matter. Am I afraid of what my spouse thinks? I'm not afraid. Am I afraid of what the future holds? I'm not. Just, it's a challenge for some of us. But you picture yourself being not afraid. And what happens is there is a health about that that changes your whole perspective. Well, the person at work said this, and they accused me of this, but I'm not afraid about what anyone else thinks. I don't have to defend myself. If they think wrong about me, it's okay. It's not the end of the world. And all of a sudden, I start to come to a place where I'm going to react a lot more whole and a lot more healthy, because I'm not worried. Fear and anxiety go together. I'm really not worried about what anyone else thinks. But I know that I can help work make relationships great. Are you with me? And perfect love casts out fear. When you get clear on how much God loves you, so as a church, as a culture, where am I going? What am I doing? What's my heart? My heart, my prayer for you, which is on the next slide, but you can flip it over if you want to. Here's my prayer for you, that you have power to grasp what is the length, the depth, the height, and the width, to know the love of Jesus that passes knowledge, so that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. I know it off by heart. I pray it for you pretty much every day. And it's a Bible prayer. Notice that it's not that you behave right, that you be a good person, that you do all the right. It's that you know how much you're loved. When you know how much you're loved, you get filled with all the fullness of God. Perfect love casts out fear. He loves me, then I can love other people. Then I can love others. Let's close our eyes here. We're done this morning. Thanks, Father, for people. Thanks that you put us in a world where we're destined to win. Thank you that no matter the challenge right now, the problem, the health problem, the financial problem, the relational problems, the fact that we get frustrated, the fact that we allow things to bother us, whatever those things are, doesn't matter what our problems or disadvantages, here's the awesome news. You adore us the way we are. You're with us. And you are at work within us, both to desire and to do what pleases you. Thank you so much for that. We just choose to put our trust in you afresh. We choose to put our trust in you afresh. We thank you for a revelation of the perfect love that you have for us. I pray you would divinely irritate every person here all week with how much you love them, and that that perfect love will take fear away. We're going to see a whole generation of people with fantastic lives and fantastic relationships. If you believe it, say yes. Praise God. Awesome, guys. Fantastic. Great to be with you. Thank you. Good, good, good. We're going to go upstairs and have great coffee, great tea. And we're just really excited about what's happening. Listen, I sent you, just before I close, I sent an email out to as many as I could. I texted some people. Our Bible college thing. Thank you.